Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Kicking with Kior here on Full Press Radio, episode number 115. Happy back with you once again on a Saturday morning. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, for another football edition of the show. And we've got a great show coming up for you. Of course, we'll react to Thursday Night Football, which if you were a Falcons fan, you did not enjoy that. But we'll dive into what that game means for both teams. We'll preview the big Sunday slate. And I think in the first segment, we're going to highlight mainly Dallas, Kansas City. That's the big game of the week, and there's big news surrounding the Cowboys in that game, how that plays an impact. We'll talk about that a little bit, give our top five games of the week, word association, which is always a good time. We'll then preview the college games of the week, and then student section showdown this week. We are joined by a person you've heard on the show before, Jack Emerson, who is the sports editor for The Lantern, which is Ohio State student newspaper. We'll preview this afternoon's Ohio State, Michigan State, top 10 showdown and in Columbus. And then we'll wrap it up looking at some college basketball games to watch this week and a little hockey news as well, especially here locally. Going to be a fun night tonight, especially out in Long Island. I want to remind you, you can follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. It's at R-E-C-K, letter I, Nader like a Terminator, and three fives. Follow us on Twitter at FP_coverage and at Full Press Radio. Sure, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You reach your podcast, just search Kicking with Kior. Chances are you will find the show. And I want to hear from you. Tell me what you like, what you don't like. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. Be sure to download the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It is free. All of our articles, podcasts, live shows, all of that is there. So be sure to check that out today. Well, of course, we start with Thursday Night Football, and like I said, if you're a Falcons fan, you did not enjoy that game by any means. The Patriots took care of business, a 25-0 win. And honestly, the game shouldn't have been that close. The Patriots had their issues offensively. They weren't able to put together those sustained drives that you would hope for. Because I thought Mac Jones had a good game, 22 of 26, 207 yards, a touchdown. He did make the interception in the fourth quarter, a little bit of a mistake where after he made the a little bit of an intermediate throw to Henry. He tried to make another intermediate throw to Jonnu Smith, and it backfired. But the one thing that Mac Jones has done extremely well in his first season of quarterback, he doesn't push the issue too much. Meaning if there's a receiver open over the middle on a five-yard pass, he's going to take the five-yard pass. And sometimes he gets criticized for that because the Patriots don't exactly let him throw the ball downfield that often. But he's also taking what the defense gives him. Like you saw the touchdown, Aguilar's got that much separation. He gets a 15-yard touchdown. I mean, you got to take that. 19-yard touchdown. You think about it from the Patriots' standpoint, their leading receiver Thursday night was Kendrick Bourne. 4 catches for 42 yards. 3 receivers had 39 yards or more. But the Patriots don't have that number one playmaker. They really are a throwback football team, relying on their defense. Their defense, by the way, I think is a top five defense. If you think about it, they had 4 sacks on Matt Ryan, including 2 from Kyle Van Noy, and a big sack from Van Noy in the second quarter where it was 3rd and 1. They get the 13-yard sack. Then a 5-yard Falcons penalty on a field goal makes Koo try a 50-yarder, which he misses. So that took 3 points off the board. And then you had the pick 6 by Van Noy on Josh Rosen. J.C. Jackson had a pick. You had Devin McCourty get a pick, and then Adrian Phillips wraps up with a pick on Felipe Franks. I mean, this is a Patriot team that is great at taking the ball away. They're getting pressure. Matthew Judon with 10.5 sacks. He's already 2 sacks shy of the Patriots' single-season record, and there's still six games left to play. And you look at the Patriots' playoff odds right now at 90%. Now, does that mean they're going to make the playoffs? I mean, you look at these next 4 games. These next 4 games are critical for New England. Tennessee at home, at Buffalo, the bye, at Indy, home to Buffalo. To me, if the Patriots go 2-2 in that stretch, they're in the playoffs. Because they end the year with Jacksonville at home, and they go to Miami. And even though they lost to Miami week one, I can't see them losing Miami twice, which would put them at 11-6 for the year, and I think 11-6 would be enough. I don't think this team is going to win the division. Just because I think the only way the Patriots can win the division with this tough a schedule is they have to sweep Buffalo. And there's too much respect for the Bills to me to pick New England to sweep both games. Even though Buffalo's got a tough test with the Colts on Sunday. But to me, this is definitely a playoff team. And this is one of those teams, if New England's a 5, 6, or 7 seed and you're one of these higher seeds in the AFC, you don't want to face them. Because Bill Belichick knows how to game plan these kind of games. Think about last night or Thursday night. Basically took Kyle Pitts out of the game. 3 catches for 29 yards on 5 targets. Falcons couldn't run the ball without Cordarrelle Patterson. They couldn't throw the ball without Calvin Ridley. And you kind of, honestly, to me, you feel bad for Matt Ryan. We'll get to that in a second. But this Patriots team's clicking on all cylinders right now. And you love the fact that Aguilar, Van Noy, and it was Judon, I believe, all in the post game talked about they still have that 2-4 mindset. And when you're 2-4, you come to practice hungry, and you come in, you're looking to fine-tune the little things because you're really super focused on that. And the fact they've kept that going, even though they've won 5 in a row, and you could criticize the opponents they played, Carolina, Atlanta, the Jets, Cleveland without Nick Chubb. But the fact of the matter is, in the Chargers, but they've won those games, and they've won them with dominant defense. Think about it. They've allowed 7 points in the last 8 quarters of football. Against any professional football team, that's impressive. And they've got a shot against Tennessee. Especially with that game in Gillette. They've got a shot. I think in order for me to think the Patriots could win the Super Bowl or get to the Super Bowl, they got to beat Tennessee for me. Because if they can beat the, was going to be a 9-2 team, it's going to be the one seed in the AFC going into that game. Because Tennessee's not losing to Houston this week, let's just be honest. If they do that, then you know they can beat anybody in the AFC. And I think they can hang with anybody in the AFC. Like, this is a Patriot team that I think the goal right now should be get to a playoff game, win a round, and get Mac Jones some experience. Because any playoff experience Mac Jones gets in his rookie year is only going to help him. It's not going to hurt him at all. And they've got the formula with Stevenson and Harris and Bolden running the football. If you'd like to see Jonnu Smith get involved a little bit more in the passing game, but the offensive line has done a much better job than they did earlier in the season. Mac Jones still takes hits, but not compared to what he did at the beginning of the year. So the Patriots are in a good position. Falcons, on the other hand, not so much. And like I just said about a minute or two ago, you feel bad for Matt Ryan. He doesn't have any of his top running back Mike Davis gets 3 carries for 1 yard. They really don't have a running game in Atlanta, even with Cordarrelle Patterson. Calvin Ridley currently taking a leave of absence. But besides Kyle Pitts, there's nothing in that receiving core that really is a legitimate threat for opposing defenses. And it puts a lot on Matt Ryan. He was 19 of 28 for 153, 2 picks. And this is a Falcon team that had a top 5 pick last year, chose to use it on Kyle Pitts. And I'm not saying the Falcons made a mistake in not drafting a quarterback. But now look at this class of quarterbacks. And if the season ended today, the Falcons are not, they're 4-6 right now. They are currently, if they have the 10th pick in the draft. Now, this draft is weak on quarterbacks where you could get a quarterback at 10. Or you could trade up from 10 to get a quarterback. But this class of quarterbacks is different than this past year's class of quarterbacks. So, what Arthur Smith kind of is trying to do here in the defense has struggled themselves. Although the Falcons' defense did okay yesterday, or Thursday. I don't think they were terrible. They did get 3 sacks on Mac Jones. They did get the interception. So they were better than what they were against Dallas, but they were awful against Dallas. And there's a Falcon team that, by the way, is still looking up in the standings if you look at the playoff picture. And at 4-6, they're still just 1 game behind Carolina for the final spot. So they're not totally out of it, but I can't see this Falcon team making the playoffs. So it's really going to come down to, okay, how much does this organization still want to use Matt Ryan? And if they do want to use Matt Ryan, they got to get him more help offensively. But you saw the graphic on the Thursday night broadcast. Think about, again, we mentioned it Thursday, where this Falcons franchise has been since that Super Bowl collapse. And where it could have been if they had held on to win that game. Maybe they're one champion and done kind of thing, but the downfall they've had in the last few years or so, it's crazy. And you feel bad for Matt Ryan because, again, I think in the right situation, he can still get it done. But in this situation, really sets him up to fail, but not going to exactly have the best circumstance. Moving over to Sunday's game real quick, and I'll spoil it right now. The number one game of the week to me is an Arrowhead. Cowboys at the Chiefs. Now, the big news from the day for Dallas, Amari Cooper tested positive for COVID-19. He is out this weekend. And then, remember, the Cowboys play on Thanksgiving against the Raiders. And we'll remind you again, our show that happens before the week in football, we do the Thursday show because Thanksgiving is Thursday. We're going to do the show on Wednesday. So Wednesday, you'll get the preview of the Thanksgiving games, and we'll have some fun with that along the way, but that'll be the next show. But no Amari Cooper. Now, I think Dak will still be fine. They've still got a good amount of weapons in that offense. Still got CeeDee Lamb. We'll see how much Michael Gallup gets used. We'll see how much they have the tight ends involved. I think it's going to be interesting in this game. So the question I think a lot of these shows have asked all week is, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Dak Prescott, or would you rather have Patrick Mahomes? To me, the answer is still Patrick Mahomes. Now, it's close, because you've clearly seen how different this Dallas Cowboys team is with Dak Prescott. I know Cooper Rush did win a game in Minnesota, but Dak is clearly a leader on this team. And you look at his numbers this year, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Over the last few games, he did snap a streak of 3 straight games that with an interception, so that's big for Dak. He's completed about 70% of his passes, on pace to throw for 36 touchdowns. Not bad. Definitely in most years, you would see Dak, I think, in the MVP conversation. Now you got Patrick Mahomes, who found it last week, 5 touchdowns, 25 touchdowns, 10 picks, though, this year. But I think a lot of that we've talked about has been the luck the Chiefs have seemed to have normally, they're not getting now. But the key, you look at this game, I think I'd rather have Mahomes because he can create more. But it's also a negative in that he can create more, but sometimes he tries to do too much with the football, and that leads to mistakes. And he does have Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, so you would say the Chiefs' weapons are a little better than Dallas. But you also have to consider, and it's not Dak's fault at all either, Mahomes has been the better playoff quarterback. Dak has had not as many chances as Mahomes, and you can't really blame Dak for when Dallas lost that home playoff game to Green Bay a couple years ago. But it's still part of the national opinion on Dak that would have to be, got to make a deep run in the playoffs. And Dallas is a team, because you ask who needs the game more. To me, it's the Chiefs. It's not the Cowboys. If Dallas goes in there to Arrowhead, loses by a field goal, like Butker kicks a last-second field goal, you're not going to go in and say, oh, Dallas missed a big opportunity. You're going to say, wow, Cowboys on the road, did some good things against the Chiefs. Kansas City loses this game, puts the Chiefs at 6-5. Remember, the AFC completely wide open. The Chiefs still have... Right now, they play every team left on their schedule is 500 or better. You could argue the Chiefs have found their form. I would say no, not yet, even though they have one dominant second half. Remember, there was a 17-14 game in the third quarter against Vegas, and then Kansas City pulled away. Now at 41-14, game looks a lot different, but the Chiefs, I think, still have a lot more to go. The other big news story this week, Antonio Brown. Bruce Arians, the Buccaneers coach, talked about it on Friday. He says that they did their due diligence on the story. What happened was, and there was an article in the Tampa Bay Times, where Brown's former chef, Stephen Ruiz, basically said that Brown got a fake vaccine card and that his girlfriend asked him to how to get one of them. Now, if this is found true, that Antonio Brown did this, and you look at what happened in the NHL, Evander Kane got a 21-game suspension for a fake vaccine card, which is illegal, by the way. But it also, if he did get a fake vaccine card, it also shows, I think, two things. One, what's really the league and team's policies on authenticating these cards? And two, you then look at AB. And we just ripped Aaron Rodgers to shreds 2 weeks ago. You could rip AB to shreds all you want, because think about really what he's learned is you got to stop owing people money, man. Like, I feel like from all the stuff that Antonio Brown's alleged to have done, he hasn't learned anything. And to me, that's kind of odd. Like, at some point, he doesn't have to realize, like, I can't do this anymore. But we'll see what comes from this story. As of right now, the NFL is looking into it. The NFL said Thursday that they haven't had a vaccine card called into question and things like that. We'll see what else comes from this story. But I found it really interesting. And again, we're going to have all these conversations about it. And we'll just see what comes out of it. So coming up next, we will do the top five games of the week and word association for week 11 in the NFL. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler on Full Press Radio. We'll be right back after this. Week 11 in the NFL, which means time for our top five games and our word association segment. But I want to remind you, of course, here on Kicking with Keeler, that you can check out our live radio lineup every weekday with FPC Radio Live. Ian Glendo and John Sapp get you covered with the morning, with the day's, previewing the day to come and recapping the day that was. And Dylan Ross, Save Sports in the afternoon. We also have FPC NFL Sunday that I'm a part of with Ian Glendon, founder of Full Press Coverage, Kyle Senra, who runs the Packers site and the fantasy site, as well as Fantasy Show, and Brayton Holacek, who runs the Full Press Chiefs site. So we'll have a lot of insight on Chiefs Cowboys this week you want to check out. So remember, you can check that every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. We run that till about a little bit after 11 a.m., 11:15, and then Kyle has the Fantasy Show at 11:30, get you ready for kickoff. So the top five games of the week, you already know what number one is, because if you listened to the last segment, you would understand that. We'll go over that as well. My number five game of the week, I am actually going to go to Philadelphia. Saints and Eagles. This is a really interesting game because Philly's kind of played themselves back into the playoff picture, one game back. Saints don't have Alvin Kamara in this game. So can Jalen Hurts and the Eagles continue that success they had last week in Denver? Eagles last year beat the Saints in Jalen Hurts' first start. So you know New Orleans wants some revenge in this game. And the Saints have had some rough luck the last 2 weeks. So this is really a big game for Sean Payton because you look at the Saints coming up next two games after this week, Buffalo on Thanksgiving and Dallas. Both those are at home, but games where you would kind of lean toward the road team in that one. Right now, the early line on Thanksgiving is Buffalo's favorite by 4.5. So this is, I won't say a must-win for the Saints, but a game they kind of need to have. Number four, I'm actually going to go to Minnesota for this game. 8-2 Packers at the 4-5 Vikings. Got Aaron Rodgers battling with a toe issue. No Aaron Jones in this game. And this is a Viking team that kind of found itself last week against the Chargers. We've really ridiculed the Vikings this year for not finding a way to win close games. But they were able to win 27-20 after trailing in the second half in L.A. Dalvin Cook right now is in good form. 24 carries, 94 yards, and a touchdown. And keep an eye on Kirk Cousins. Just 2 interceptions this season, 18 touchdowns. He's 10th in the league in passing yards, completing 68% of his passes. Cousins hasn't thrown an interception since October 10th. So he very quietly is having a good season. And this game is in Minnesota. So this game means a lot more to the Vikings than it does the Packers. Although Green Bay, of course, fighting to try to get that one seed. But don't be surprised if this game is very close. Right now, Green Bay only favored by a point. Number three, I'm going to go to L.A. Sunday Night Football, Steelers at the Chargers. We'll see if Ben Roethlisberger plays, but right now he is out. We'll see if that changes between now and Sunday. But no T.J. Watt, no Joe Hayden. and no Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's out with COVID. So we'll see how the Steelers respond against a Charger team coming off a tough loss. This, remember, the Chargers crowd is more road-heavy than home-heavy. But Pittsburgh really disappointed last week against Detroit. They need to step up their game. And even if Mason Rudolph is the quarterback, you would think they would go more to a running game because the Chargers' run defense is so bad. And if you're LA, how do you bounce back? Because we talk about the Chargers. We talk about the Chiefs not having playing many teams with a worse, lower than 500 record. Chargers only have two more games left. The Giants and the Texans. So Chargers really need this game to try to avoid all those tiebreakers. Right now they lead the tiebreaker on Vegas. So big Sunday night football game coming up between the Steelers and the Chargers. My number two game of the week is in Vegas, Bengals and Raiders. And first off, you wouldn't pick this as a top five game when the season began, but this is where we are in week 11 in the NFL. And it's both teams trying to get back on track. Cincinnati has lost two straight, coming off their bye week, struggled with the Jets, struggled with Cleveland. Their defense, which was good early in the year, has been awful. I mean, while you look at Vegas, who was bad against the Giants, bad in the second half against the Chiefs. Which team tends to find their form? Because, again, you look at the playoff picture. If the season ended today, both these teams would be out. And when you look at 5-4s right now between the Chargers, Vegas, and the Bengals, you got Indy, Cleveland, Denver at 5-5. Head-to-head is going to determine a lot of these final two or three playoff spots. So whichever team wins this game is going to have much more of an inside track. And number one, obviously it's Dallas, Kansas City. I mean, game of the week on Fox, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Dak versus Mahomes. Like, alone, that game is going to bring so much intrigue in terms of the over-under in this game. Right now, that's about 56.5. So you get a good number there. But how do you not enjoy this football game? So that's why it's number one. Honorable mention to me, I will say the Washington Panther game is intriguing, but it's just to see Cam against Ron Rivera. Panthers were great last week against the Cardinals. Washington gets the upset win over Tampa Bay. But without Chase Young, is there really that much intrigue on this game? I mean, the Panthers did win against Arizona, but I want to see what Cam Newton looks like getting a start still before I say Cam is completely back and he's revitalized the Panthers. I mean, I think he's revitalized the Panthers with just his energy. I still need to see him start a whole game and let's see what he looks like after that. Or does Matt Rule stick with the whole start Cam Newton, bring in PJ Walker at times kind of thing? I wouldn't rule it out because, hey, they got Joe Brady, who's really creative and offensive coordinator. So not a problem there. And then Indy Buffalo would be the other one. Because I think the Colts and Bills is a fun game, rematch of last year's wild card game, and we'll get to that in a second because we're in a lead-off word association with that. But those are the two games I considered. But I thought Saints-Eagles was going to be a really close competitive game, so I put it at number five. So let's go. Word Association Week 11. If you're not familiar with the game, here's how we play. I throw out a matchup of the week. I say the first word or phrase that pops in my head about the game. And again, you could share your favorite team's word or phrase for each matchup. You can tweet me all the time, at RickandAndrew555, either for this week or for Thanksgiving. We have three games on Thanksgiving, so we'll do Word Association for that as well. Or for next Sunday's games, the last Sunday in November. So let's start in Buffalo. Colts at the Bills. Big game for the Bills because they don't want to stay in second place in the AFC East. And the Colts trying to keep their dominant form. And my word for this is opportunities. Remember last year the Colts, a lot of drop passes in against the Bills. Really, they missed so many chances in the red zone. Frank Reich got a little bit too creative at the goal line. Kind of messed with that. Buffalo took advantage. Josh Allen made some great throws to Gabriel Davis. Bills found a way to hang on. If you're the Colts, if you get those chances on the road and you've got Carson Wentz, you've got to take advantage of this because you have a running back in Jonathan Taylor. You saw the Bills struggle with Derrick Henry a few weeks ago. So Buffalo is susceptible to the run. This could be a big game for Jonathan Taylor, but even if Taylor gets his yards, Colts, when they make those downfield passing plays, they have to convert them. Only chance they have. And I do think they actually have a pretty good chance in this game because I do think a lot of revenge is on Indianapolis' mind because they'll tell you. They probably should have been the one that beat Buffalo last year. And the Bills, I mean, what have we learned about the Bills, really? They played the Jets last week. played Mike White and Joe Flacco last week. And then they played the Jaguars 2 weeks ago and lost. So we definitely learned anything from Buffalo. I think this is the game where we kind of figure out, okay, is Buffalo still a top two or three team in the AFC, or are they a team that kind of drops in the pecking order? We'll find out this week. To Chicago, the Ravens at 6-3 at the 3-6 Bears. And my word for this is mobility. Very fun matchup here with mobile quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields. Going to get a lot of quarterback rushing yards. Bears put Khalil Mack on season-ending injury reserve on Friday. So Baltimore, I think, has the edge here. But remember, they're coming off that lousy game against Miami. Bears have an opportunity here to maybe pull an upset. Remember, they're coming off of the bye themselves, where they lost that game against the Steelers, where you got the taunting penalty and all that stuff. So Chicago's been a little more competitive the last two games. We'll see where they're at against Baltimore coming up. But I still like the Ravens in the ballgame. To Cleveland, the Lions off a tie last week against the Browns. And every week we have a flip the channel game of the week, and there are a few candidates for that game. This is going to be the flip the channel game of the week. Nick Chubb is back. Baker Mayfield's going to play. But with Jared Goff out, Tim Boyle is starting at quarterback for the Lions. That alone should tell you don't watch this football game. Unless you've got Nick Chubb on your fantasy team or DeAndre Swift or somebody. Don't put this. You've got much better 1 o'clock options than to watch that game. If Cleveland doesn't win this game, Baker Mayfield, I know he's banged up, Baker Mayfield can't win this game, and the Browns need a new future plan at quarterback, period. To Tennessee, the Titans at 8-2 against the 1-8 Texans, and my word for this is domination. I know Tennessee hasn't exactly dominated games without Derrick Henry, but they won on the road in L.A. They won a close game against New Orleans. I don't think this game is going to be close. Texans struggled against Miami in their most recent game. And the Titans, to me, they kind of got it figured out, at least defensively, their front seven. Deontay Foreman can do some things in the running game, but I think even without Julio Jones, without Derrick Henry, Titans are going to roll. To Minnesota, the 8-2 Packers, the 4-5 Vikings. And my word for this is throw out the record, because you can look at 8-2 against 4-5, but the Vikings have been one of those teams that is a little bit tricky, but Aaron Rodgers has played well against the Vikings. Since 2014, Rodgers has 24 touchdowns and 3 picks in 13 games. But in the four, Minnesota has beaten them 4 times. And usually it's when their Vikings defense can find a way to get the job done. So to me, you look at the Vikings pass rush against Aaron Rodgers, and especially if A.J. Dillon doesn't have that dominant game, Minnesota at least has some more options. So division rivalry, if you throw out the records, and Minnesota's starting to play a little more consistency. You don't trust them in a close game just yet, but this is one I think will be close down in the fourth quarter. To MetLife Stadium, the Dolphins and Jets. My word for this is confusion, because now the Jets are starting Joe Flacco and Mike White's the backup and Zach Wilson's still unhealthy. There's confusion all over with the Jets. And Robert Saleh's got many questions to answer, but he's not answering questions about what Rex Ryan says or comments that Robert Saleh's everything Rex Ryan is except all the negative stuff. I don't get it. I don't get why that Rex Ryan. I guess Rex Ryan read a headline and got mad about it. I don't get it. But Miami, I think there's still confusion with the Dolphins, because they do win this game. They would win their third in a row. And you look at the Dolphins right now. I mean, this is all about Tua finding that confidence. Because you look at Miami's schedule, Carolina, Giants, Jets, Miami has a chance to get them to play themselves at least in a conversation. But their defense has to be a lot better. You would think their defense, which dominated against Joe Flacco last year, is going to do the same thing again. But Miami has a chance really to get Tua some confidence in this game. To Philadelphia, the Saints and the Eagles. And my word for this is desperation, because both these teams need the game. Eagles trying to keep their positive momentum going after the win in Denver last week. They've won 2 of their last 3 games. Philly's now, again, just a game out of the playoffs. And you look at the Eagles' schedule going forward, they do not play a team over 500 until their final game against Dallas. Saints, after this week, they have the Giants, Jets, Washington, Giants, Washington. Yes, the Eagles play their last 4 games in the division, and 5 of their last 6. But the NFC East is not that good. So, big chance the Eagles. We just talked about the Saints. They've been close in the last 2 games. They've fallen short, but I don't think it's really Trevor Siemian's fault. Defense, I think, has to make some plays for New Orleans in this game, and I think against Jalen Hurts, they can make a couple turnovers. So I like New Orleans on the road. To Carolina, Washington against the Panthers, and my word for this is the Cam revenge tour. I like Cam Newton in this game, and more so I like Christian McCaffrey, because now with Cam Newton back, you can see more utilization of McCaffrey. I think Carolina's going to find a way to get the job done here at home. To Jacksonville, the Niners at the Jags. My word for this is avoid the letdown. Your San Francisco cut off a short week. It dominated the Rams. A chance to go to 500 now. Got to avoid that letdown. Because San Francisco's down at least, I think, from what I understand, they're going to probably be without Elijah Mitchell and Jermichael Hasty in this game. So down a couple running backs. But you've got the defense. You've got Jimmy Garoppolo. Debo Samuel's playing well. George Kittle's back and healthy. Don't lose this game to the Jaguars. We go to Vegas. The Bengals and the Raiders. You just talked about this game was number 2 on our top 5. And this word is positive vibes, because both these teams could use some positive vibes. Mainly, I think, defensively. Both these teams have struggled on defense. Good quarterback matchup here with Joe Burrow and Derek Carr. Both of them can get the ball down the field. I'm not sure who I like to pick this game. I think right now I'd lean Cincinnati. I think I trust them a little bit more than I trust Vegas. But this one's a coin flip. And it's a pretty interesting coin flip because, again, which one of these teams gets back on track? Because Cincinnati's schedule, pretty much tough after this week. And the Raiders, they got to go to Dallas on Thanksgiving. So Vegas, if they lose this game, could be staring at maybe a four-game losing streak when it's all said and done. So they need a win in this ballgame. So does Cincinnati, but I would say Vegas needs a little bit more. To Kansas City, Dallas, and the Chiefs. My word for this is shootout, because I don't see how these teams don't score points. The Chiefs' defense has been better, but I think Dallas is going to score, especially with Elliott and Pollard in the run game. Even without Amari Cooper, you still got CeeDee Lamb, you still got Michael Gallup, Dalton Schultz. They're going to score. Kansas City is going to put up points of their own. To me, it's just a matter of which quarterback takes care of the football more. And that's where the question mark comes with Mahomes. I'll still pick the Chiefs because they're at home, but would not surprise me if Dallas pulls the upset. Which I don't even know if it'd be is it an upset, really? I don't think it would be. To Seattle, the Cardinals, with no DeAndre Hopkins. Kyler Murray sounds like he's going to play against the 3-6 Seahawks. Chris Carson out for the year for the Seahawks. And my word for this is getting back on track. Arizona needs this game. I don't think they need it, but rough one against the Panthers last week. They're starting to get healthy. I mean, this is the kind of game that, yes, Seattle's a tough place to play, but you're Arizona. You got to find a way to win. Russell Wilson did not look good last week. We'll see if he bounces back after coming back from his finger injury. But Arizona's got to find a way to be dominant. We'll see what happens. Sunday Night Football, Steelers and the Chargers. My word for this is getting it on the ground. Good matchup of running backs here, Najee Harris and Austin Eckler. I think actually the running games will decide this one, but you got Justin Herbert going up against a banged-up Steelers defense. If Pittsburgh's going to win this game, they're going to need a lot of ball control, a lot of time in possession, and just feed Najee Harris the ball over and over again. I think the only chance they have, because you saw the Steelers defense without T.J. Watt, it's not the same. And this team struggled with the Lions last week. How do you trust them against the Chargers? I don't think you can. And then Monday Night Football. Giants at the Bucks. Tom Brady, by the way, has only lost 3 straight 1 time in his career. Back in 2002. He hasn't lost 3 straight in almost 2 decades. And my word for this is kryptonite avoided. Tom Brady, usually his kryptonite is facing the Giants. Last time these two teams played, the Giants played it close at MetLife Stadium. Rob Gronkowski sounds like he might play this week. Antonio Brown, as you talked about in the top of the show, he's out still with an injury. I just can't see this Buccaneers offense struggling against a Giant team that really is still trying to get healthy. It sounds like Saquon will come back. Shepard banged up. I don't think the Giants could have enough points, even though this Tampa Bay defense is bad in the secondary. Daniel Jones makes too many mistakes for me to pick him against Tom Brady. To me, I think the Bucs find a way to dominate this game. and get back on track. So that's your word association for week 11. Remember, if you want to play the game every week, @Rickinator555 on Twitter, that's where you find me. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. Always happy to take your suggestions. Coming up next, we head over from the NFL to college, where we give our top five games for today's action, and we'll play Student Section Showdown coming up a little bit later. You're listening to Kickin' with Keeler here on the Full Press Radio Network. We're going to talk some college football Saturday after the break. Moving over from the NFL to college football here on Kickin' It with Keeler. Week 12, only a couple weeks left in the regular season. Some interesting games coming up on the docket today. So as always, we give our top five of the week, and then we give our Student Section Showdown game, which will usually be our number one game that we're looking forward to, which is why we highlight it with the student sports reporters. So my number five game, there's a couple of good ones actually this week. I'm going to go to Oklahoma, number 13 Oklahoma at home against Iowa State. Sooners coming off that loss to Baylor. We'll see how they bounce back. This is the noon kickoff on Fox. Iowa State, really one of those tricky teams to figure out. They're good at getting upsets. They're not good when they're the favorite. Now, they get the upset here. You got Brock Purdy, a quarterback who struggled against Oklahoma in the first half of the Big 12 championship last year. Sooners struggled against the run last week against Baylor. They're going against one of the best running backs in college football in Breece Hall, 16 touchdowns on the season. And if you're Oklahoma, maybe you got to get back to the ground game. Kennedy Brooks last week against Baylor, 14 carries for 55 yards. He has 22 carries for just 90 yards in the last two games. So Oklahoma needs more from Kennedy Brooks to get the win here. Number four, Wake Forest at Clemson. Wake at number 10 in the rankings. If Wake Forest wins, they most likely will win the Atlantic Division, but one more win would seal it. And you've got a good matchup here with Wake Forest offense against this Clemson defense. Clemson's not going to put up a lot of points. They've just struggled all season long. Although you look at the Tigers last couple weeks, they beat Louisville, beat Florida State, beat UConn, which is nothing to write home about, but they scored at least 30 points in three straight games. So maybe Clemson, I don't know if it's the opponent, but Dabo Sweeney's got this team playing well at the right time. They really got nothing to lose because they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to win the ACC anyway. So, to me, it's what Brent Venables dials up against Sam Hartman. That's going to be the fun matchup here. This is the noon game on ESPN. A lot of good noon games, by the way, today. Number three is going to be the game out in Alabama. Number 21, Arkansas. Number 2, Alabama, 3:30 on CBS. Question is which Arkansas team shows up. Arkansas got a good win at LSU last week in overtime. They beat Mississippi State the week before, but is this the Auburn team that, is this the Arkansas team that beat A&M earlier in the year, or is this the one that got shut out by Georgia, lost to Auburn at home by two touchdowns, did play a tough game with Ole Miss, but they lost going for two. To me, there's just too much Alabama. Alabama's been inconsistent, but they've been inconsistent on the road more so than at home. I remember the Crimson Tide 2 weeks ago had a rough go against LSU in their last conference game. I don't think Alabama's going to be looking ahead to Auburn in this game. I think Bryce Young will be fine, but still, good SEC matchup here. And remember, Arkansas really had its problems with Alabama last year. They want to get a little bit of revenge, but I don't think Arkansas has enough in this game to pull the upset. But still, when you have two ranked teams, usually makes this a good matchup. Number two is going to be out in Utah. Salt Lake City, 7:30 Eastern on ABC. Number 3, Oregon, at number 23, Utah. Cam Rising's going to be the one to watch here for Utah, their quarterback. 14 touchdowns to 2 interceptions this season. Rising hasn't thrown a pick since October 16th against Arizona State. Oregon, we saw their second-half comeback against Washington State last week. But can Oregon go on the road, get a win? Remember, these two teams are likely going to play each other in the Pac-12 championship. It's not going to be easy for Oregon to win this game twice. And playing at Salt Lake City is a tough environment. I still kind of like Oregon in this game, mainly because you look at Travis Dye, who has scored a touchdown in each of his last five games. He has 9 touchdowns over that span. And when Dye gets the ball, he's really done a good job getting big yardage. He's averaging 6 yards per carry with a long of 53 this year. He does a good job catching the ball in the backfield. So he's not T.J. Verdell. He's been able to get the job done. And on the road this year, he's averaging close to 6 yards a carry. So to me, if you're Utah, you got to stop the run. and make Anthony Brown be more of a passer than a running back. Anthony Brown, in the last two games, has thrown for under 200 yards. So that's kind of the blueprint. If you want to keep Anthony Brown from having big games. Now, Brown, at the same time, when he hasn't thrown the ball a lot, he's also ran it over 10 times. So if Utah can keep Anthony Brown in the pocket, that's going to be the key to an upset here. I'm still going to go with Oregon. Oregon's done a good job being the road underdog. They were road underdogs at UCLA a couple weeks ago and won. They're underdogs by three this time. I don't see Oregon losing. I know people are kind of low on them still, but I like the Ducks to hang on. It'll be close, though. And the number one game, of course, is out in Columbus. Michigan State at Ohio State. The battle in the Big Ten East continues. Michigan State, if they win this game, they would have the tiebreaker with both Ohio State and Michigan. Could basically, in a sense, punch their way to the Big Ten Championship, but they'd have Penn State next week. We'll see what happens. To me, this is a fun matchup because you have a good defense in Michigan State against the best offense in college football in Ohio State with C.J. Stroud throwing the ball to Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith and Jigba, running the ball with Trevion Henderson. This team is good. And I said it this week on Thursday. You'll hear it in my conversation with Jack Emerson from the Lantern coming up. I don't think this is Ohio State's toughest game. Right now, they're favored by 19. They were favored by 3 touchdowns last week against Purdue, and they dominated that game. Their toughest one is Michigan. So I think Michigan next week in Ann Arbor has the better defense than Michigan State has. The key, though, in this game for Michigan State is quarterback play. Peyton Thorne doesn't have to out-duel C.J. Stroud. He just has to do a good job of not turning it over and keeping drives sustained. Because Kenneth Walker's going to get his. Kenneth Walker's the best running back in the country, 17 touchdowns, almost 1,500 yards. Walker against Maryland last week, 30 carries for a 143 and 2 touchdowns. Walker has at least 22 carries in each of the last 5 games. He's going to need at least 25 to 30 if Michigan State wants an opportunity to win this game. But to me, I think if they had Jalen Naylor, the wide receiver, to go with Reed, I think they'd have more of a chance. But when you only have one big playmaker option on offense, at least in the receiving game, I don't see how you keep up, especially in Columbus. Mel Tucker's earned that contract extension, win or lose. And Michigan State, I'm sure, is going to be motivated by the fact that they're still behind Michigan in the rankings, even though they control their own destiny. But to me, Ohio State's just too good. And I think they find a way to win this ball game and setting up a fun matchup. Because Michigan's not going to lose to Maryland, although it's college football, you never know this year. Would basically set up a top five, top six showdown between Ohio State and Michigan next week. And we will, if that happens, well, I think even Michigan were to lose. That will probably be our game of the week next week. And we'll hopefully, we had the Ohio State angle this week, so we're going to hopefully get the Michigan angle coming up next week on the show. Especially how big game that is for Jim Harbaugh. Other games of note. Virginia at Pitt. Now, why is this game big? Pitt's number 18. The winner of this game wins the ACC Coastal, essentially, and will go to the ACC Championship game. I don't think if Virginia can clinch it outright, they still have to beat Virginia Tech in their rivalry game. But Pitt could basically clinch it outright. Kenny Pickett, Jordan Addison, we talked about Pitt all year long. They're fun to watch, so Pickett's been having a fantastic year. That'll be a fun game. Also, keep an eye on Cincinnati, number 5 in the country, home against SMU. SMU's not ranked, but they're 8-2. And they've got a really good quarterback in Tanner Mordecai. 37 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. Mordecai has thrown at least 3 touchdowns in 3 of the last 5 games. And you look at Mordecai's success, he has thrown 6 of his 10 picks on the road. So that's something to watch. But SMU can put up points. And with Cincinnati struggling in terms of injuries at running back, they did not play well against Tulsa 2 weeks ago. A little bit better against USF. But one of those games where SMU is going to come ready to play. So Desmond Ridder and Cincinnati need to keep putting pressure on that committee to put them in the top 4. That's why this game is so huge. A quality opponent. Don't get many chances with the way the American's been this year. And a very sneaky, underrated game, I think, is the one in Texas Tech. Oklahoma State at Texas Tech. Now, why is this a sneaky game? The reason it is, Texas Tech... It could be a trap game for Oklahoma State. This is an 8 o'clock game on Fox. Spencer Sanders has done a much better job. Oklahoma State's defense is good, but do the Cowboys get caught looking at Bedlam in Oklahoma? which is a game I think if Oklahoma and Oklahoma State would have been close for the student section showdown, maybe we'll throw it in a poll. Right now I'm leaning Ohio State, Michigan for that. We haven't really talked about Michigan all year, so, but Oklahoma State's been that team. They can run the football. They can play defense, and Spencer Sanders gets the job done. But Texas Tech, that's a team. Remember, going to Lubbock is tricky. Texas Tech also is coming off that win over Iowa State at home last week. Keep an eye on that game. I don't think Oklahoma State loses, but don't be surprised if that game is maybe close at the half. Not sure. The other game, at least Friday of note, Houston beat Memphis 31-13. Now, why is that a big game? It's big for Houston because as long as they keep winning, and they have UConn next week, which they should win, they will stay in the rankings, and Cincinnati would get a chance to play a ranked opponent in the American Conference Championship game. That will only help them, not hurt them. So keep an eye on Houston, who, again, their only loss this season is to Texas Tech to begin the year. So good job by the Cougars. Clayton Tune is a good quarterback to watch, even though he had two interceptions in this game. 21 touchdowns, 6 picks on the season. Tune actually threw a pick for the first time since early October. Keep an eye on Houston. So coming up next, student section showdown, Michigan State and Ohio State. Jack Emerson from the Lantern will join the show. We'll talk about this whole Ohio State's offense, their improvements on defense, where they should be in the playoff, and we have a little fun debating the playoff standings as well. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler on Full Press Radio. Student Section Showdown is coming up after the break. Student Section Showdown takes us to Columbus, Ohio this week for a huge game in the Big Ten East and for the college football playoff. Number 7, Michigan State at number 4, Ohio State. The noon game on ABC. College Game Day is there. And joining us once again here, preview the game for a student section showdown series, he is the sports editor for Ohio State's student newspaper, the Lantern. You heard him last year previewing the national championship with us. I'm sure he hopes that it's a better outcome than the national championship last year. Jack Emerson is here. Jack, how you doing today?
Great, Ricky. How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. So before we get into the matchup as a whole, let's talk about Ohio State, who it seems like, Jack, their offense – like, there's no issues with this offense. It's one of the more fun offenses in college football. Trayvon Henderson's one of the better running backs in the country. He's a freshman. It just seems they just plug and play different running backs. But what have you made of – what I've been curious about this offense is what have you made of C.J. Stroud? 30 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. You saw Justin Fields a year ago. What are their similarities and differences in your mind watching Stroud compared to watching Fields?
Watching Stroud, I kind of see somebody – it's almost like I see an in-between of Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields into one guy, and that's C.J. Stroud. Stroud doesn't really run the ball as much as Justin did, obviously, but he is very good at extending plays. He's got an incredibly strong arm, and, of course, he's got some of the best targets in the country to throw the ball to. So he's done a very good job, especially being a redshirt freshman coming in, having to compete for that job. I think he's – really excelled at what he's done. Obviously, there was the Oregon game where he struggled in the fourth quarter down the stretch, but I think we've seen him kind of grow as a player. We saw him in high-pressure situations against Nebraska and Penn State, and they were able to get some points on the board to extend some late leads. So I think he's really grown as the season has progressed. I think he's just had a very good year, especially being a freshman.
Yeah, and I think when you look at last week against Purdue, it was one of those games where I was like, Purdue shouldn't be underdogs by 3 touchdowns. They just caught off a big win over Michigan State. I've been one to criticize Ohio State for their – I mean, they've dominated teams. They haven't exactly played anybody up until Penn State. They struggled with Nebraska. Okay, what is this team? And then C.J. Stroud in this offense plays its best game of the season. And it just seems like, Jack, when they're clicking like this, when you got Wilson back and Olave and Smith and Jigba and Henderson, they're probably the toughest offense to stop in college football.
Oh, I have to agree. There's really no weaknesses. They've got one of the best offensive lines in the country. Obviously, you know that receiving core, Wilson, Olave, Smith and Jigba, they can attack you from anywhere. The running back duo of Henderson and Williams, even Teague, they all have different skill sets, so that really plays into their advantage. You know, Henderson's more of that guy who's going to give you those big runs, those 40, 50-yard runs. When you have Teague and Williams in the game, it allows you to kind of get those chunk, like 4 or 5-yard carries, those hard-fought runs. So really, this offense is so dynamic that can attack you in so many different ways. That's why I think it's so tough to defeat that offense, to stop them, slow them down.
So as you look at Ohio State's offense, how does it stack up? I mean, we know how it kind of stacks up. They're going to get their points. But what should Ohio State fans be worried about going against Michigan State's defense?
I mean, I would say probably the pass rush mainly. I think with Ohio State, things that you've seen on their offensive line that have been an issue, they rotate guys. They rotate six guys. They bring in Matt Jones, a guard, to rotate in with Thayer Munford and Paris Johnson at guard. And it's interesting because you have an offensive line with four tackles, so you'd think pass pro hasn't been an issue. It largely hasn't, but at times you've kind of seen some communication issues, some pre-snap penalties, stuff like that when guys are out of their place, out of their natural position. There's been some issues there. I would say that's probably the biggest thing that they have to be worried about is that offensive line maybe losing that communication, because we've seen it mid-season against Nebraska and Penn State. They were just kind of off track, almost, it felt like. So I think that's the biggest issue. I think that's the only thing that can really stop this Ohio State offense is when they're knocking themselves off track, honestly.
So let's switch over to the defense, and that's something Ryan Day and the coaching staff was criticized for early in the season, particularly when C.J. Verdell was running all over them in week two. So how have you seen this defense improve since that game, and is it more just, like I was mentioned earlier, the lack of competition they were playing, or what exactly has improved from this defensive unit for the Buckeyes?
I think the biggest thing they really needed was to get experience. They had seven new starters week one come in and, you know, just take over a defense that was filled with veterans from the year before. Guys like Denzel Burke, true freshman, who's really stepped up and played very well in his position. Guys like Cody Simon, a sophomore, Tommy Eichenberg, a sophomore, who had to replace a linebacker core of four guys who had been there for 4 years. You know, it's just been a lot of guys where they kind of had to plug young guys in, and they had to get experience. I think as the season has gone on, we've seen that experience kind of take shape, and you've kind of seen them put better performances together. The run defense has been very solid the last couple weeks. I think there's still some concerns in the pass defense, especially in the middle of the field. The safeties have had some rough outings the past few weeks, but for the most part, I think this defense is starting to click. I think last week was a little bit of a step back, but that Purdue passing offense is very potent and difficult to stop if you're anybody.
And I think, honestly, it's unfair to look at that Purdue game and say it's a step back for the defense, because when you get up like 35-7, you're not going to play with that same intensity, especially as 18, 22-year-olds. As much as Ryan Day wants him to play that intensity, it's easy to understand why you don't have a sack in a game you win by four touchdowns, opposed to the close game against Nebraska where you had five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were also kind of more keyed on stopping the pass. That I believe they were only rushing three for most